You'll never hit the oil because you're not going deep enough in one area. Find out what is yours to do. Ask yourself, meditate on that, pray on that, open to that. And when you have an intuition, what's yours to do, freaking do it. Don't hold back. Do it, even if it's a small thing. That small thing will move the needle forward. And if everyone asks themselves, what's mine to do and what's mine not to do? Look, I love nature, but I'm not here to save the whales. There's other people doing great work on that. What I'm here to do is save the minds and the hearts of leaders, help them awaken to their symbiotic nature, and get them to run companies that are good for themselves and the world.
Welcome to Green Planet, Blue Planet podcast. I'm here today again with Sachin Raja. Welcome, Sachin.
Thanks, Julian. Always a pleasure and a joy to be with you and
yeah. Share. I'm excited to drop into your wisdom today and get some, you know, continuation of our dialogues here. And since the last time we chatted, you published more books, and I had the pleasure to read them, and they hit home for me because you're talking about a transcendent culture, transcendent CEOs, and in general, like high performance culture in a way that is heart centered, brain coherent, you know. You want to just maybe set a little bit of that context of how come you wrote those books, and were they published from within Warrior Sage, or is that like an evolution of what Warrior Sage is?
There's transcendent CEO and transcendent culture. Both are self-published through our organization, Warrior Sage. And the evolution of those books came from my work with mentoring, being a personal advisor, mentor guide to prominent CEOs, business leaders, founders of companies in very different realms. And, you know, in my work, I came from the psycho-spiritual dimension of leadership, teaching, spirituality, consciousness, martial arts. And then I was interestingly called into, I didn't have a personal interest in touching corporations. I was in a different world altogether. I was basically a lay monk. And then, interestingly enough, about 11 years ago, I started having reach outs to business leaders. When I mentored them, they saw me on events, workshops, seminars, or at talks. And I said, very interesting. Now, my background, my father's background, are all business leaders going back generations. My mother's side are all social servants going back generations. And so these are typically like oil and water in my Indian culture, spirituality, humanitarianism, service versus traditional business. Let's make, you know, good money. So my journey has been about awakening those potentials and having business be a path of service, having business small all the way to mega corporations be a platform where consciousness can grow. We have temples, we have meditation places, we have yoga, we have all this. But what about the radical idea of our actual organizations being a platform for awakening? Mm. So that's where these two books come from. They're my pragmatic teachings and sharings from mentoring the CEOs and their companies and their leadership teams for the last 2 decades. And I've distilled the teachings, the sharings, and what I consider the most potent, applicable wisdoms in there. And the Transcendent CEO book, I mean, it's quite easy. You can open it anywhere, hold a vision, hold an intention, hold a question. But the culture book is specifically a step-by-step on how to create super teams that cross the finish line with the highest visions.
Yeah, I love this bigger vision, like audaciously going for this idea that business itself is a vehicle of transformation, right? And business itself is, you know, in its purest form could be of service to who we are as a species, who we are in interplay with nature. Maybe let's drop in there on, you know, the connection between spirituality and business, because traditionally people see those as very separate, I guess, but there is such a beautiful link. And you're one of those people that sees this really clearly. I'd love for you to just elaborate, like, where do you see it's inevitable that spirituality and business are actually linked rather than being these separate things within people's lives?
Well, it's our egoic separate mind that separates everything and gives it definitions and locks them into different silos which then can have the opportunity to compete with each other or align. And when we have spiritual awakening, and we recognize our true nature, we recognize what reality is at a core intrinsic level, there is no separation between spirituality and business, spirituality and health, spirituality in leading our families, spirituality in relationships. To me, spirituality is the source. And spirituality simply means it's not the glamorized versions that we have nowadays, which have a lot of glamorized externalizations of what it means to be spiritual, the spiritual look, the spiritual talk, all the things that modern comedians make fun of regarding spirituality. They have a point. They poke at it because of its superficial decorum and its superficiality or so-called perceived. But in true awakening, we recognize our unity consciousness, that we are all of the same intrinsic, undeniable, unfederable, unchanging consciousness, our divine nature. When we have that recognition and we settle into that recognition and we embrace the identity of what we truly are, not as a personality figure, but as consciousness itself, as truth itself, then what happens is that everything arises out of that space. We're not doing business, doing family. We are an expression of life itself. And so when that expression of life, if we are, we all need to make an income. We all need to make an earning. We all need to make a way for our livelihood and our sustenance. Those of us who are called to the path of business, entrepreneurship, leadership, running companies, founders, you name it, corporate leaders, executives, C-suites. Somehow what's happened over the years is we've removed the connection from spirit, our heart, our soul, who we are from that, thinking that if we grow in business, it'll be a detriment to our spiritual life. Or if we grow in spirituality, it'll be a detriment to our business life. And what I found is it is not true. It's an absolute
illusion.
It's
the opposite almost. Eh?
What is true from my experiences is the more settled we become in our true nature, the more we emanate our true nature, the more we see the beauty, the profundity, the consciousness, the oneness of who we have on our teams, and the more we foster an environment that generates that, success in the external world goes through the roof. Alignment, synergies, potentials, opportunities just spiral up and up and up. I truly feel that by tapping into the field of our spiritual or our true nature, business becomes a no-brainer because it becomes an expression of abundance, and the expression of the abundantness of the universe rather than the lack within our ego.
Yeah, I like how you know how succinct and how grounded those words are, because often when we talk about spirituality, as you said, just when you started sharing, it can be this, you know, new age kind of I would say it's like a misinterpretation of real spirituality. It's like another fancy thing to do to decorate the ego, you know, rather than actually the intrinsically connected part of ourselves that has always been one with all things in a deeper way, in a deeper layer. And so how do you see the world outside of, your own creation? If we're looking at, you know, the rise of AI and this being yet another topic that is like, you know, and yet another doomsday topic, you know, where do you see that benevolent AI can arise and become the way that we're going to steward and cultivate this topic?
That's interesting. I'm working with some prominent professors in AI right now, right at the roots of creation, and working on the ethics and the direction of AI so that it's human centric. We understand that if we just have AI that is world-centric and takes care of the world, it might think that we could be a species that's overgrown that needs culling. And that is obviously our fear as a humanity for those who are in the know regarding AI. Also, to me, it all boils down to one thing, whether it's AI or any condition on the planet, any of these grave things that we're dealing with, any existential risk we have on our planet, it all boils down to this for me. It's a crisis in leadership. We have all the knowledge. We have all the intellect. We have the incredible scholarly capacity of brilliant minds around the world to be able to have brilliant creations and technologies. We have all the technology on the planet we need. We actually have all the resources, all the money, all the human power that we need. What we're lacking is the enlightenment of our leadership. Mm-hmm. What we're lacking is the unification of our leadership, them unified together in heart and spirit and camaraderie, in a higher vision together. And what we're also lacking is the mobilization of our leadership. So whether it's AI, whether it's climate change, whether it's political, economic, we have a universal, widespread crisis in leadership. And what the crisis is leadership is being reigned by the ego. The ego demands for itself. The ego sees itself as a separate entity. It sees itself, it usually is always coming from a place of lack. There's not enough for myself, our company, our organization, our country, wherever I'm going. That is the crisis of today. And I'm glad, Julian, yourself, myself, and there's others that are working on illuminating our leadership. I believe whoever's in charge of AI, to get directly back to that, we need to have the professors, the creators, go deep into meditative practice, go deep into understanding their true nature, have them have experiences where their true nature is evoked in them, not through intellect, not through teaching, but through a tangible experience of awakening. When that happens, there'll be an infusion of energy. There'll be a transmission of that higher form energy into the creation. By nature, our spirit is benevolent. By nature, our souls, undressed from ego, are benevolent. So when we undress the souls of the leaders in charge of our technology, and they are humbling themselves to come to their true power, then I believe not only AI, but all the other challenges we have will be naturally solved, and we'll move forward with them because we recognize collectively our symbiotic relationship. And now it's not just a good idea. Now it's the way to live. There's no separation.
That's a fantastic
distinction. So we're moving that way, and we need to accelerate that for sure.
Yeah, it can't just be another good idea or like a fancy to have. It has to be the you know, inextricably linked understanding that this is the way to live, right? Then we the path of embodiment of our species is to come back to this. Yeah, you called it the undressed soul, but like the essence of who we really are, rather than the utmost kind of atrophy of separation, right? Where it's like it's all about the separation and the ego and independence, which I think is, you know, probably part of the human experience to be able to go all this way. The question that comes up in my mind, if it is climate change, if it is, you know, AI, you know, anything in our history even, is always we can do this, but why should we? Right? So we could build the atom bomb and create nuclear catastrophe, but why should we? Or we could build a artificial intelligence that can take over the world in the same way that humans have, you know, dominated the world. But why should we? Isn't there more to our experience and our consciousness? Do you think it is simple questions like this that will start guiding us down a deeper path? Or you also mentioned, you know, taking those leaders, those prominent kind of creators into more transcendent states. What else do you think is the trim tab to, you know, have especially the topic of AI to be a mirror that can actually help us rather than a mirror that, you know, takes us deeper into the darkness of separation?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, since we're moving through this pandemic, on the tail end of it, I hope, and many of us hope, that pressure of the pandemic forced the whole world to go within. There's a pressure for us to be able to start to inquire on the deeper meaning of who am I? What am I? What is my lot here in the world? What is the purpose of life? And I think this is a very powerful time, an opportune time to maybe slow down, take the foot off the brakes, or sorry, off the gas, put the car in neutral, maybe park it for a little bit, and then ask ourselves, you know, I have an inquiry that that comes from the Shaolin Kung Fu tradition, my tradition. And that inquiry, to me, is a laser inquiry. It's a very powerful way to ask myself and to get me back in touch with what's most really important. And that question is, what must I do today to live, to love, and to die complete without regret? What must I do? What must you do? What must we do today to fully love, to fully live, and to die fully without regret? If we faced our death tonight, how would we live today? How fully would we be given? This life is very precious. Many people around the world have lost many friends during these times from health and many other challenges. We have all types of upheaval happening on the planet on many realms. How do we stay centered in the midst of all of this? To me, it boils right back down to the simple, we're all seekers. And it's to recognize, holy jumping, could all these problems, to the macro problems going on all around us, the fears happening in our personal lives, fears happening on the macro level, what if we took the time to say and slow down and go, what's mine to do in all this? So that's the question, Julian. Yeah.
What's mine to do?
What's mine to do and what's mine not to do?
Mm.
So sometimes I'll sit down. I could do a lot of things. There's a lot of pressures on this planet that all of us could be conscripted around. But if we did, we'd be running around and we'd get very little impact anywhere. So the way I look at it is, if we're drilling for oil or gold or whatever, you got to drill. If you pull the drill out 10 feet and you drill somewhere else 20 feet, you pull that drill out, you drill 50 feet somewhere, you'll never hit the oil because you're not going deep enough in one area. Find out what is yours to do. Ask yourself, meditate on that, pray on that, open to that. And when you have an intuition, what's yours to do, freaking do it. Don't hold back.
Yeah.
Do it. Yeah. Even if it's a small thing, that small thing will move the needle forward. And if everyone asks themselves, what's mine to do and what's mine not to do? Look, I love nature, but I'm not here to save the whales. There's other people doing great work on that. What I'm here to do is save the minds and the hearts of leaders, help them awaken to their symbiotic nature, and get them to run companies that are good for themselves and the world. That's my work to do. What's everyone's work to do? There's no better or higher. There's not one with more moral significance or less moral significance or impact. Yeah, I want everyone here listening to recognize you are a force of benevolence, a force of good. But you got to use it.
You got to use it. And it comes right back to what you said, you know, a few minutes ago. It's about getting real with our leadership, right? Because it starts with how we lead ourselves into each and every day. And in my own experience, that is exactly the question. It's like, what am I here to do? And how can I make a step of that happen today? And if we don't take ourselves into this sacred inquiry, this world can lead us astray in a certain way. We can drift, right, with all of the offers and options of distraction. And so I think it really comes back down to, are we leading ourselves to live a life of meaning, a life of purpose, and a life of connectedness to the natural world and our fellow humans around us?
Beautiful, brother. Absolutely.
So, you know, you've already tapped into that quite a bit, but often the business world is, you know, seen as this cold-hearted place, right? Business as usual, cutthroat, all of these words we use. I know I've seen one of your videos where you talked about how to have principles and heart in a cold business world. I'd love for you to share a little bit on that. In, you know, when we find ours to do, you know, following that inquiry that you just guided us into, how do we stand strong and tall and have those principles in heart, even if the world around us still is seemingly cold or separated?
For me, it boils down to tolerance. It boils down to, what am I willing to tolerate in my life today? What am I not willing to tolerate? When I was younger, there was things I'd tolerate. There's no way I would tolerate today. There's things I tolerate today that I wouldn't have when I was younger. So, in other words, Am I willing to tolerate the mediocrity, my head in the sand? Am I willing to surrender to the status quo that my life is? Or is there some evolutionary force, some deep calling, some unsettled stir that's been knocking on my soul for days, weeks, months, perhaps years, perhaps decades? Our job is to listen to that call, get away from all the morass of life, go silent, go to the woods, go camp, go for a walk in nature. If it's too far, go for a walk in nature at a park. Sit down for an hour a day. If you're not great at meditating or tuning in, the universe, the nature's already meditating. Drop into the meditation that's already occurring in nature.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah, I love that.
It's already happening. And so we just need to rest in the meditation that's already arising. And already this living moment is a meditation in which we are either separate or we're dropped into and receiving and as that meditation we are. Now, in terms of business, the business leaders I work with, they've come to a place, many of them are damn successful. $1 billion businesses, $100 million businesses, $50 million. Most of the people I work with can be financially independent and pack up their life for the rest of their life, probably take care of themselves and their family, not having to pick up one day of work for the rest of their life. That's a damn good, amazing position to be in. And that we should honor ourselves for and honor those who have achieved those levels of success. And there's some people that I've mentored that are on their way there, but are having challenges. They're in startup phase. There's chaos. There's craziness. There's all types of learnings, as we know, as business leaders along the way. But do we want to tolerate business as usual? And if we do, it's going to be the same thing. Your spirit's going to die. You might make money, but you're not going to be fulfilled. Your soul's not going to be liberated. And it'll be business as usual. You might be able to buy bells and whistles and vacations, but if you can't enjoy that because your soul is lost, it means nothing. So I've seen this many times over in the decades I've been mentoring, many times over. The first thing that we need to start on is, what is my principles? And to me, that starts with power. So in my work, I use five pillars to represent. So power is represented by the circle here. It's power, heart, freedom, flow, and wisdom. So for me, power means, what is our deepest vision? What's our mission? What's our dharma? And we can access that by going into inquiry. What am I here to do? What's my deepest soul's purpose? What's not my deepest soul's purpose? Once that arises, our deepest soul's purpose, from the depths within us, then we can ask that of our teams. We can craft a team, an organization, which has a purpose, a mission, a vision that evokes the collective spirit to move towards that, such as creating a world that doesn't break down. That's a vision I created, a mission for one of the companies I work, which has a software which knows when mechanical stuff is going to break down months and years in advance. But that doesn't sound so sexy, but when we're creating a world that doesn't break down, imagine that as a vision. That's the type of evocative world-level vision we can create and generate true enlightened power that brings people together. So power, and then for me, heart is really valuable in an organization. Dropping the silos and all the egoic, trying to fight one another to go up the corporate ladder. Aim to raise your own reputation significance, the way to raise the heart in an organization, in our families. What can I do for Julian to raise his reputation, his significance to the world? What can I do with my friends, those I mentor, those I serve, my family? What can I do to raise their reputation and significance? When we have a culture that does that, oh my goodness, magic happens. The heart, you, because now we want to serve each other. Then there's freedom. To me, freedom is the next pillar we need to evoke in ourselves and our organizations. Where is our limitations in mind? Maybe we hit levels of success before, but we also have imprints of failure. Or we have habits that have suppressed us, like fear of calling or following through. There's hundreds of behaviors that we could be manifesting that keeps our freedom tapped in. We want to transform those obstacles, turn them into total freedom states. The other area that we're really lacking in companies, organizations, is flow. There's very little Taoism and natural flow in organizations. It tends to be driven, hard, yang, push, keep pushing, keep striving. Yeah. Once we attain that, that destroys our human soul. We can't, it's not sustainable, not only in the external world. We can't sustain it energetically. We break down, burn out, people quit, all of those things. So flow state, how do we enter flow state? We got to reduce the internal importance on all the things that we've added too much importance to. When we lower the importance energetic around most of our projects and we raise the impeccability, lower the importance, raise the impeccability, we just tap into flow state. Flow state gets stuck by the Velcro of demand, the Velcro of striving too hard.
That's a brilliant picture. Closes you down. The Velcro that brings in resistance to flow, right? Like push, 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 which is, I would say, pushing at the right moment is kind of part of flow. But if this is the only modus operandi, it's very visible in most companies that I work with as well. Is there is a desire from usually someone in the leadership bracket. Like, we just got to keep pushing harder. And you can see most of the times that the team that hears that already rolls their eyes just hearing it. Because it's like, yeah, that's the only thing we've been doing for years. And it's, as you said, it burns people out. I think there's a bit of a concept.
I used to be that type of leader, pushing, driving. Now it's like, hey, we make up our own times. Here's what we're our goals. And we go into flow state. And we work together symbiotically. And we have a much natural flow. Now, the last piece I wanted to share about was wisdom in my five pillars philosophy. And wisdom is represented by the square or castle. Mm-hmm. And for me, wisdom is being rooted in our authentic nature. Some would call it our non-dual nature. Some might call it our spiritual nature. Whatever words you put on it, it's usually not the words, but it's that sense of what I am that's greater than this personality figure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, usually we go to the place of soul, or you know, the place of, again, spirituality. But really, who are we? More than just this limited personality, where we have this essential nature to us. And the picture that just came up for me is that deep down, most of mainstream society is still fighting that essential nature. Right? It's like you wake up, you kind of get anything into your body that you can to push the energy up and high, rather than flowing with the cycles of naturally available energy, or with the cycles of, you know, I grew up in a part of the world where we had four seasons, and so yeah, October comes around, and sure enough, you're gonna want to sleep longer, right? And the winter's there, and it's gonna be dark and gray for 2 to 3 months. And now, personally, I've escaped that sometimes and traveled in the winter. However, there is such a powerful wisdom in those natural cycles. And I think we do see an external world where it almost looks like it isn't, you know, that is the cold business world we just talked about a few minutes ago. But I don't think it really is, for one, it's not sustainable. We just, you know, demystified that. But it really, I don't think this is what anybody really needs or wants, you know, not even just for the rise of your stock participation in a company. But I think, you know, you said it during this COVID window, a lot of people went within. Now, at some point, I'm not sure if everyone remembers that these 2 years happened, and that, you know, they're only 2 years, they weren't like 5 or 7 years of everyone being locked up at home, but they happened, right? And I think a lot of people are waking up to say, no longer, like, no one else should tell me what to do with my life. In fact, I have this connection inside, and I have this connection with the natural world and the connection with all the humans around me to make much more holistic decisions. Do you think people are actually going to remember this, or do you think we're going to go just through more and more of those kind of rhythms and ins and outs of, you know, needing to wake up pretty hard at this point?
Well, I'm an optimist by nature, and I'm going to enter the universe and the reality where there is this movement, of course. We wake and sleep every day, all of us, hopefully, we wake and sleep every day. And as we walk on the spiritual path, which for me goes from ego, develops into self-mastery, mastering the ego rather than having the ego run around, cultivating our personality, our capacities, all the way to personal mastery. Mm. And then for me, the next stage is transcendence, illumination, self-realization, self-actualization. And so this arc of growth is like this. Even when it's dipping, it's still in the larger picture growing. And so I see and I feel that happening on our planet. Mm. I think folks like us sharing wisdom, transmitting our experiences, not just sharing intellectually, but transmitting our experiences, sharing the vibration, the truth of what's possible, and inviting people. And also at times when we need a challenging them to step into Dharma, to step into truth, to step into true power, enlightened power. And so we are at that precipice. And like anything, you know, I had a few CEOs I met over the last probably couple of weeks who were inquiring about my leadership training. We have an executive black belt leadership revolution training. And I came to realize really quick, that's got to be important to you or it's not. Mm-hmm. And if it's not important to you to enlighten your team, yourself, then and your organization, there's not much anyone's going to do for you. In my opinion, you're going off the hill. You're walking the plank. Your business will be shut down in probably, who knows, 3 to 5 years. If you're lucky, maybe a little longer. But your soul has already been sold out. So you've already lost, no matter what you, whatever external gains.
And it will catch up with you.
And then there's those rare ones. Right. And then there's rare ones that want holy jumping. They see the opportunity for themselves, their organization, being a platform, a temple of self-realization, peak performance, peak existence. I like to call it peak existence. Mm-hmm. Performance is pushing until you can't go any, right? But peak existence is a whole new other level. And I believe that is our birthright. And that's where we as influencers, as leaders are moving into. Mm-hmm. And that is peak existence, which is the next dimension from peak performance.
I like it. Yeah, peak life. You know, one of the very, like, the most down-to-earth personal ways of how I relate to this as you're sharing this is having created the boundary of healthy sleep in my life. Now, when I'm in the West Coast of North America, timing-wise, you're always kind of the last time zone, right? Only Hawaii is further out. So sometimes you need to wake up early to meet someone. But for me, the luxury of not accepting calls before, I don't know, 9 or 10 a.m., to just be able to just sleep until I'm actually up. Now, some people have a different point of view, and, you know, there's the whole, like, 5 a.m., 5:30 a.m., you know, morning club, and that's all great. I love that too, you know. Sometimes I wake up naturally at that time. But allowing myself to sleep as long as my body needs to sleep, and just knowing and trusting that no matter what time I wake up, the day is going to start rolling. The day is going to start having momentum. I'm going to start meeting my own peak energy of the day. But there's something personally, you know, very sacred about sleep that allows me to not feel pressured. I remember when I, you know, like school already instills that in people, no? Like you need to wake up. You're basically pressured already first thing in the morning. Oh, you're late, you know? It's like, how is that ever going to make me feel good? And so, and recently I read another book by strategic coach creator, you know, blanking on the name right now. And they were talking about LeBron James being one of the greatest of basketball of all times and him sleeping between 9 and 12 hours every night. So this is one of the main things he does different than other athletes is just having literally a sleep coach and sleeping longer than people. And so I find it interesting that these very fundamental parts of what it means to be human, right? Like rest, You said it earlier, nature is already meditating. Just go and get some, right? I think those are the most down-to-earth things that actually matter for everyone, that you know, we don't need to enhance. We just need to actually surrender into that. That's part of our organic existence. Is we're much better when there is no pressure on our organic existence, but then kind of self-created pressure maybe in the right moments.
I love that. Beautifully shared. Beautifully shared. I'm of the same milk as you, Julian, that I like my 8-9 hours sleep. I've gone through the intense periods of early mornings. I've done the discipline, wake up strong. And that was very valuable for certain parts of my time, my life, when I needed that yang shoring up energy, that get your ass together energy. I'm a little older now, so I'm enjoying my 9-10 hours, taking my time, just like you shared, connecting with the natural rhythm of being. And then the activities that arise from a place of deep restedness are profound. We become like Archimedes. A little movement creates big movement. Yeah. When we're exhausted, tired, overwhelmed, stressed, you got to do a lot of movement to create a little change. Yeah, like Archimedes, give me a lever long enough and I can lift up the world. In the same way, when we're in the Tao, we're relaxed, we're centered, we're well rested. You know, in my Transcendent CEO book, I talk about one of the chapters, one of the disciplines that I coach my CEOs and I mentor is extreme laziness. Whole chapter on extreme. Don't just do lazy, do extreme
laziness. Yeah.
If you look at the yin and yang symbol,
right,
the Chinese philosophy, the yang represents the action, the activity, the light, the expansion. The yin is the feminine, the quiet, the black, the reserved. The heart of yang is yin. So the stronger, forceful, more powerful, prominent, influential, far-reaching leader you want to become, even next stage of development, of impact, you got to be even softer, even more yin at your core. That's the paradox. Mm. And to me, that's extreme laziness, the total surrender. So once a day, once a week, for example, this week has been a lighter week, but later today, I've got 2 hours. I'm going to do nothing. I'm going to sit in my backyard. There's a beautiful grandmother tree. I'm not going to read. I'm not going to take my phone. I'm just going to put a blanket on the ground and chill. And here's the magical thing. Whenever I've done this in retreats with my CEOs and I say, now we're going to do extreme laziness time. Put everything away. You should have no concerted focus on anything. No reading. Mm. Don't make use. Don't make this pragmatic. Mm-hmm. You have to be anti-pragmatic, anti-focused. Everything that you're trained to do, I want you to relinquish control. And be a master of non-doing. Wu Wei, as the Chinese call it.
Yeah.
You know what the funniest thing is? Whenever we spend a half a day doing that, in the next morning, we gather again. But half the CEOs, many of them go, you won't believe what deal just happened. I didn't have to even be there. My team took care of this. Mm-hmm. They've made hundreds of millions of dollars, sold big companies, had miracles and magic happening because they invested in extreme laziness. In other words, going into the yin of the yin of the yin. And that produces a movement in the external world which coordinates synchronicities and synergies and brings things together outside of the human mind's capacity to correlate that. It's like we switch on a universal organizational system when we consciously allow ourselves to go to the heart of yin. So that's a little thing I wanted to drop for all of us.
Yeah, I love that. So well articulated. And, you know, it's the paradox of letting go and then letting in, right? Because it's maybe for some of those individuals you just explained, it's the first time maybe they're not, you know, full steam into the pragmatic reality of like, what's next? How can I measure this time? 2 hours? Well, let's at least read, you know. I just read 100 pages. I'm productive. It's interesting. I definitely, you know, when we take people on retreats, we do similar things with silence, which is half a day, full day, just silence. There's nothing. There's no book. There's no cell phone. And usually, Not always, but usually people love that much more than any of the activities we do, because it allows you to reconnect with a deeper layer of who you are. That, it always works. It's like a magic wand. Silent time always works because it creates this deeper layer of connection.
Yeah. Nothingness opens the door to everythingness. Everythingness leads to nothingness.
Yeah, Sachin, thank you so much for, this philosophical podcast and, diving into the worlds of transcendent culture, transcendent leadership, and, getting real with our leadership and understanding that spirituality is a intricately linked part of everything, and therefore specifically of business. I think there's much more to come, and also a lot more to learn for all of us, me obviously included. I'd love to hear, from you before we wrap up here, just like how do you help anyone how can you help anyone who's listening right now to make that one step today into their uniqueness, into their following, as you said earlier, like, what am I here to do? What's a pragmatic way that you can invoke that in someone who's, been with us for this episode, who's about to go back into their day and realize, okay, this was good to tune into.
That's a great question. Well, I'm going to cut straight to the chase and bring out my kung fu sword, if I may. And
go for
my
it.
Premise is that everyone listening already freaking knows what their purpose is, what they're meant to do today. Everyone. And either we're aligned with it and we're doing it, or we're chicken shit. And if there's something else that's making us, or we think we need to do other than what our deepest purpose is, we've bought bullshit and we've bought into it, because it's not ours to do. Lord Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, near the last chapters, near the end of his talk with him, Arjuna is a despondent warrior, and Krishna says to him, he says, it's better to do what your dharma, your job, your purpose, your mission, your soul's calling, better to move forward in that, even if you fail, even if you're not good at it, even if it's 2 out of 10, than to be 10 out of 10 at someone else's mission, purpose, or assigned job or role that they've given you, or one that you've taken on by impression or by obligation, or that you just ended up in that because that's how you did it in your culture. If you're listening to me and you can hear this, then you can hear the fear and the fear of the ego, the chicken shit nature of the ego, to actually step into what you're meant to do. You already know it. Take the step. If it's only a 10% step, take it. If you have an intuition, it's to serve children this week, do it. It could be the intuition to serve dogs, or to mow someone's lawn, or it could be to help someone in need. It's usually always connected to service. That's the hint. What's the service you can make that'll make you jump, leap, stretch, but that'll make you feel so damn good within? That's the risk to take. And that's the calling card of our deepest dharma. It comes with discomfort if we move towards it, and the great reward of soul fulfillment when we offer the service that we're meant to. The return and what comes from it is none of our business. The only business is the offering. The return is in God's hands.
Powerfully said. Let that sink in and go out and get it. You already know what's yours to do. Thank you, Sachin, for your presence, for your wisdom, for the way you show up to do what's yours to do, and the way you're able to articulate and share this with us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Julian. Thank you for sharing your brilliance and wisdom to the world. And we're a team, all of us, listening or not, whether we know each other or not, we're a team. So let's join on an energy level, on a heart level, and do our good work together.
If you enjoyed this video,
make sure to hit the subscribe button below, follow and stay up to date with all of our new content coming out on betterworlds.com and all things regeneration. If you enjoyed this video, make sure to hit the subscribe button below, follow and stay up to date with all of our new content coming out on betterworlds.com and all things regeneration.